Welcome to episode 158 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I catch up with Daniel Brusilovsky from the Golden State Warriors to discuss growing up in Silicon Valley and what innovation means in an NBA team.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who now owns nine pairs of Sports Geek shoes, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I do own nine pairs of Sports Geek shoes, a mix of Adidas and Nike, and you can catch them all on at Sports Geek Shoes. That's where they get released. They have got their own Twitter handle because sometimes they get more mentions when I'm on stage doing a keynote than I do. So I thought they should have a Twitter account. And the Twitter account also helps to claim them as a marketing expense. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. And you're doing so either on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or my favorite, Pocket Casts. And I had to put that one in because my guest here constantly gives me grief about my fervor in promoting Pocket Casts. Daniel Brew, as I know him, as I have stumbled over his name in full, both in the intro and I do so in the interview, I call him Daniel Brew because that's how I've always known him. That's what his Twitter handle is. Daniel is the digital initiatives lead at the Golden State Warriors, and he is super connected in Silicon Valley. He's grown up in Silicon Valley. He's had a great entrepreneurial story himself, bouncing around in different roles in Silicon Valley, both his own companies, running a teens in tech incubator, doing his own apps like Emoji and things like that, as well as working on the VC side and in the startup side. I've been chasing down Daniel for a while since meeting him. And luckily enough that we did catch up recently when he was in Melbourne for a conference. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Daniel Brew from the Golden State Warriors. Very happy to have a good friend of mine in my hometown here. He's been a long-time listener and a long-time person that I have been chasing for a podcast, Daniel. And here I am. I'm going to stuff up his name. I know I did the prep. Daniel Brusilovsky.
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 Yeah.
Close enough is not good enough for mine. As someone who gets Callahan, Callaghan, and the like, and I even get Cian sometimes from my barista.
Wow.
So I don't like mucking up people's names. But so
well, I
Daniel,
appreciate that.
Because I only know you as Daniel Brew.
Which is what most people know me as.
Know you as Daniel Brew. So you are the digital initiatives lead from the Golden State Warriors. You're out here to speak at a conference. You were here last year for we took you to a Bulldogs game. And
yep.
this week you've come in, caught a few games, then you're speaking at a conference and you're meeting with people. How's your visit been so far?
Oh, it's been awesome. I saw two fantastic footy games on Sunday and going to see my first NRL game in Sydney. So I'm getting the full Australian sports experience.
So it was, for those who weren't following Daniel's Instagram story, you went to the Bulldogs game, Bulldogs Essendon?
Yes.
And hung out with the Bulldogs guys and the Bulldogs piled on the goals at the end to win by about 30 points. So it was a really good game.
And they were down by 30 to start the game. And then they came back and the last few minutes were a little tense because it was a 1 or 2 point game and scored a few goals and got the win. And was lucky enough to go into the locker room and hear the boys sing the song and celebrate. And it's pretty cool.
And then you went to a completely different experience at the MCG
to see my team, to come and see
the Adelaide Crows and Collingwood. You missed the best part, the first half where Collingwood played really well.
Well, what's funny is I was texting with my friend from Collingwood who at halftime they were up 50 or so and he said, don't even bother coming. The game's over. And so I was following along and it's like, all right, it became a 40-point game and then the 30-point game and a 20-point game. And I got there with about 5 minutes left in the third and it's about a 20-point game. And then the fourth quarter, it wasn't looking very good. And then they scored two or three goals there where I was like, okay, maybe Collingwood is good. And then that last mark and the goal to tie it was that close.
Yeah.
To so, not being a goal.
Yeah. So for the people
great
who,
game.
It was a great game. Terrible game for me.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So the people who were in the US, the game ended in a draw. There was no overtime.
So I'm sitting there next to my friend from Collingwood, and I'm like, all right, when's overtime start? And he's like, I mean, there's no overtime. I said, is there sudden death? And he's like, nope, it's just a draw. I'm like, all right, great. Another sport with a draw.
But it was, yeah, after 2 hours and the emotion, it's such an empty feeling to go away from it. I've experienced in a grand final and then come back the next week and won. So it was good that you got to experience both the MCG at its, you know, it wasn't a big crowd, but the noise was there. Yep. and it was a good time.
The seagulls were flying too.
Don't even get me started.
It's just like AT&T Park in San Francisco.
The seagulls, did you see that they had kites above the MCG of hawks that were trying to dissuade the seagulls from coming in?
Didn't work very well.
They don't work very well. They've also got lines across. And anyway, the seagull problem is not something we can solve on the podcast. So as I said, we've known each other for a long while. I think in 2015, I came by the Warriors office, watched a game, caught up with you guys.
Yep.
And then obviously we've had association in multiple seat conferences.
Yep. Just saw you in Atlanta a few weeks ago.
And it is. You must be getting sick of seeing me pretty much. So what I want to do is, before we get into your job and what you do at the Warriors, is sort of wind it back a bit and get into the Brew story. This is the Brewcast. I think this will be the title. So, you know, take us back to, you know, you were a Silicon Valley kid, and that's where you grew up. Like, where did you get your start in, you know, tech, entrepreneurship, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, I'm born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area. So for me, growing up, both my parents worked in tech. So for me, it wasn't anything weird or strange that, you know, my parents worked in tech. A lot of my friends' parents worked in tech at companies like Oracle and Google and Yahoo. So it was just normal for me. But the one thing that I thought was really interesting with my parents is that they never really pushed that on me. They kind of let me discover it on my own. I mean, we always had computers around the house and obviously the internet and things like that, but it was never something where they really encouraged me to go learn how to code or to podcast or to blog or to pick up a camera. They really left it up to me to discover it. And the very first kind of experience I had where I realized that this whole internet thing is pretty amazing is my mom went on a business trip to India.
Yep.
And told me to create a Skype account so that she could call me and we could video chat from India. And I was probably 12 or 13 at the time. And when we did that video call and she's in India and I'm in the Bay Area and it's crystal clear quality, I was just absolutely blown away by the power of the internet to bring people together. And that's kind of where my fascination with kind of media started. And early on, I started a blog and a podcast talking about Apple and technology, and was fortunate to get some internships at companies in Silicon Valley. Ended up joining a company pretty early called Quick, QIK, which was one of the first companies to do live mobile video streaming. You had to have a Nokia N95, which was like the only phone that had a good enough camera to be able to actually stream. I remember I'd have to test all of these devices to see how it would work and the quality and the latency and the buffering and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of Nokia devices back then, and was there for 3 years up until the company actually, ironically enough, got sold to Skype.
Yep.
And then Skype after that got sold to Microsoft, and still have a few friends that work there. But during that time is when I really got fascinated with kind of the media side of the business. And that's when I started podcasting and blogging and creating video and a lot of that kind of stuff. And, I had a stint working at an agency called Just Three, which did was primarily a creative and digital agency working with some great brands like Nike and Samsung. Worked at TechCrunch for a little bit, and then started my own company as well called Teens in Tech. So one of the things that I saw in the Bay Area was that there's a lot of really young entrepreneurs, but there wasn't really an outlet for that community. And the thing about Silicon Valley that's unique about it is it's a community. It's a lot of people that are going through the same challenges, and I just didn't feel like there was other young people, because I knew they existed. I knew they were there, but there wasn't that one place to go. So Teens in Tech started out as a conference, and we did a yearly conference every summer. And people like Steve Wozniak came to it, which was incredible. You know, one of the co-founders of Apple.
As a fanboy, you must have been freaking out.
Oh my God. It was one of the coolest moments. I still have one of the photos of me giving him a high five, on my computer somewhere. But during that time, what we saw during the conference is that a lot of these young entrepreneurs had ideas, but they didn't really know what to do with them.
Yep.
So that's when we started the Teens in Tech Incubator. And so these young entrepreneurs would apply. We would selected 10 companies over the course of two summers, gave them a little bit of money, gave them office space, resources, mentors. And we never really expected any of them to kind of take off and become, you know, the next Dropbox or the next, you know, whatever, Pinterest or Google or Twitter. But it was a really cool experience to kind of help go from idea to even just a version one product.
And it just started connecting you further into the Silicon Valley ecosystem.
Exactly. Because we then worked with companies like Microsoft, who were kind of the corporate partners who supported us and gave us the funding to do it. Companies like Accelerator and Red Bull, they supported us. And so I was able to grow my network and meet so many more entrepreneurs and venture capitalists. And I think a lot of people were giving me this opportunity because I was young. I mean, I started Teens in Tech when I was 15. And so everyone kind of saw me running around Silicon Valley and they thought, oh, you know, look at this cute kid who's like trying to start a company. And, you know,
we like Silicon Valley's mascot.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily classify it that way, but
they
a
were,
lot
but
of
they were
people
were encouraging because you had the drive and you were you know, trying to help other people.
Yeah. And so that opened up a ton of doors. And so now kind of in my role at the Warriors, it's funny looking back, is a lot of my, a lot of the people I meet with and kind of on the venture capital side are a lot of relationships that I've had back from my teens and tech days.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, you never know who you're going to meet and you never know when it's going to come full circle. And so, Teens in Tech, we ended up selling kind of the core assets of the business and kind of ended that chapter of my career, and ended up going and spending some time at a venture capital firm called Highland Capital Partners. Spent a summer there as a summer associate. And then after that, joined a payments company called Ribbon, which was kind of my first foray into jumping into a venture funded startup, being the first business hire and helping kind of the company go from a very basic product into a product that we were then working with brands like Target and musicians and artists and things like that.
And so after, how was it on going into Ribbon and, you know, being in that early stage space, there is a bit of, you've got to cover all bases and do a bit of everything. What was that from a learning experience for you to go from, hey, here's me running a conference and then an incubator and your own boss, you're doing your own thing. Every door you knock on and get rejected or get a yes from, that's you, to moving into, like you said, it's there's startup money in there, it's been backed and you're being directed to do things. How was that change and then learning to be in that side of the business?
So I didn't go to college. So for me, kind of that world was my knowledge, you know, that's where I learned how to do and not to do and things like that. When I was at Quick, I learned a lot being early on with the company and seeing it grow quite a bit. I saw firsthand kind of how the founders were running the company and what mistakes they made or what they did really well. And I tried to, you know, keep as much of that in the back of my mind because I knew I wanted to start another company or be a part of a company and take those learnings. And so when I was at Ribbon, I was fortunate enough that the founder of Ribbon, a guy named Haney Roshwan, is one of my closest friends. I met him, ironically enough, on the Caltrain going to TechCrunch 40 in San Francisco. He was about to go to Ohio State and happened to be in town for the conference. We met on the walk from the Caltrain station to the conference and you know, remained friends. And when I was at Highland Capital, I was looking at the payment space. And Haney was just starting Ribbon then, and it was in the payment space. And so he and I got together, and as we were talking, he was telling me that, you know, and I was telling him that, you know, I'm only going to be here for about 5 months. He said, well, when you're done, why don't you just come and join us?
Yep.
And that's kind of how I joined Ribbon. But when I was there, it was probably the best learning experience I've had at a startup because A, you have to do everything.
Yep.
And B, even though you raise money and you have investors, you're calling the shots. And you're responsible for when those things go well or go wrong or if there's any issues. I mean, We kind of went through a few different phases where we pivoted a few times. We built products that we thought were going to be great and turned out weren't so great. We pivoted to the next product, got some traction, but then realized that the financial services space is actually a really tough space to be in because a lot of it is controlled by the banks and the credit card companies. And as a small, you know, 6-person company with only $1.5 million in funding, it's really hard to grow. So you learn these things firsthand, and it's, you know, it's up to you to figure it out. There's no one holding your hand helping you.
Yep.
So you learn a lot. And I think that's been probably one of the best learning experiences I've had is doing all of that firsthand.
And so from there, you also were co-founder in Emoji.
Yes.
Take us through that, a little bit of that story, how it came about and you know, the part you played in that.
Yeah. So there's a group of friends that we kind of saw what was happening in the space where GIFs were starting to become more and more of a normal kind of communication method.
Yep.
And we saw that there was this visual communication method coming, which was GIFs and emojis and photos and videos and things like that. And so what we saw was there's kind of a gap in the market for being able to create stickers really, really easily.
Yep.
So the original idea for Emoji was take a picture of anything. We had a really nice cropping tool and that you could trim the photo and just trim, for example, your face.
Yep.
And then share that on iMessage or Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or whatever it may be. And so me and a few friends came up with the idea. We built kind of the first version, launched it. It immediately blew up. We launched it, I think, on a Thursday. And that Monday, it was on Good Morning America.
Wow.
Where they were doing a demo of it. I mean, it was a surreal few weeks. After that, we ended up raising $2 million in financing from Goodwater Capital and Joe Lacob. Joe happens to be the owner and CEO of the Golden State Warriors. And then we were off and running. And it was probably one of the most fun journeys because I got to do it with a bunch of my best friends.
Yeah.
And even though there was the ups and the downs, and every company has that, no matter if you're a startup or you're the Warriors or you're Accenture with hundreds of thousands of employees,
yep.
You go through those ebbs and flows. And so, but the fact that we were doing it as together as friends and we had built that relationship, I think made it that much more special. And ultimately the company was acquired by Giphy, which was awesome for us. And so, three of my co-founders now have moved to New York and work for Giphy, and I'm here, cheering them on, from the sideline now.
Yeah. And it's a terrific story. So that sort of gives the listeners, for the people who don't know Brew and don't follow him, a little bit of a background to sort of say how you got to it, where you are, you know, because I remember being introduced to you, you know, Kenny Lauer, who's a previous guest. He said, "Oh, you've got to meet Brew. He's super connected. He knows everyone in the valley. He's super switched on. He's going to take over all of these things for us." And that's how I was introduced to you when I met. So, what is, you know, take us through your role of digital initiatives lead and what it's meant to entail.
Yeah. So you mentioned Kenny Lauer. So Kenny is the one who brought me to the Warriors and really created my role. And he and I had been talking he and I have known each other for probably close to a decade now. And he's been one of my mentors and someone I could really lean on and go for advice. And when he told me that he was joining the Warriors, I said, "You can't go to the Warriors and not take me with you."
Yeah.
Because sports and tech have always been my two biggest passions. And I didn't really know how to combine the two. I didn't think that jobs like this existed in sports.
Yep.
You know, I think as a fan, you just see what everyone else sees. You don't realize that there's 200 people in an office that actually make all of that happen.
And was that your knowledge of sports prior?
Oh yeah. It was just the fact that I showed up to games.
Yeah.
I didn't really have that many friends because all my friends were startup people.
Yep.
Or entrepreneurs or from Silicon Valley. I didn't know that this world existed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I joined the Warriors and I saw, what kind of, you know, even before I joined, because two of my best friends were working for the Warriors at the time, two of my co-founders from Emoji. So I started to kind of get a glimpse and I realized, oh my God, look at all these ticket salespeople and these finance people and the marketing people and the digital people and the sponsorship. And like, you don't realize that there's a whole company on the back end to support all of this. So until I actually saw it, I mean, I was shocked.
Yep.
But when Kenny joined, one of the things that he saw, and this wasn't just at the Warriors, but across the sports industry, is that everyone is so focused on the day-to-day that we have to sell tickets, we have to sell sponsorships, we have to activate the sponsorships, we have to do the work in the community and the foundation. And there's a lot that has to happen on a day-to-day that when something on the innovation or emerging technology side comes, it's really hard to step away from the day to day and really evaluate what that means and how it impacts our business.
Yep.
And so he wanted to bring someone in to really focus on the innovation side, but with an understanding of the day to day.
Yep.
And at the Warriors, we call it the performance engine and the innovation engine.
Yep.
So even though I live in the innovation engine, I understand and I sit with everyone in the performance engine. So that's the people that manage the website, that do social, that send out the emails, that, you know, run the app and all those other parts of the organization. So,
because if you don't have some recognition and knowing what's happening over there, then you're too disconnected to bring innovation that's going to work and help.
Exactly. And there's a pretty big event happening at the Warriors, which is that we were moving and building a new arena in San Francisco.
Yep.
And so for us, we really had to think about the future from a completely different perspective because we're building a new home.
Yep.
And technology, of course, being that we're Silicon Valley's team, is going to play a pretty big part in that.
Yeah. And this is the, you know, the conversation I had with Kenny on the podcast 2 years ago. Like prior to going to Seed in San Francisco, you know, he was already, you know, in discussions of, well, this is where we want to go, and didn't take the path of, okay, oh, we'll wait 2 years until this new stadium's up and about, but really going in and saying, well, what can we do with this stadium, Oracle? What technology can we put in? Yes, it's only going to be here for a certain, you know, it's all got an end date. But effectively using Oracle almost as a bit of a technology petri dish.
It's exactly what we call it.
Yeah, to go, hey, what can we do in here? Because then we'll figure it out. Because you don't want to go and find out if it works in the new stadium.
Exactly. And we're pretty lucky that our current venue, Oracle Arena, is still a fantastic venue.
Yep.
We have Wi-Fi that works really well. We're able to play around with things like beacons and things on the mobile app that I know a lot of venues that are, or a lot of teams that are building new venues, they don't have that luxury to have a venue that still, you know, functionally works pretty well. So for us, it's a huge opportunity to still have a place where we can test out and really figure out what we want to do. Because like you said, the last thing we want to do is be handed over the keys and then say, now what do we do?
Yeah.
And so we're able to really figure out and test. And we have some great partners. We announced recently that Accenture is going to be our official technology innovation partner. So to have the resources of a brand like Accenture to help us really come up with ideas and as they say, and as we say, reinvent the fan experience and create a whole new experience in Chase Center enables us to do so much.
And so in looking ahead at that, at the new stadium, how much are you looking behind and looking at what other stadiums are doing and trying not to just keep up with the Joneses, but also trying to say, well, what are we going to do?
I mean, the nice thing about being where we are is in the last few years, two venues have opened that I think have really pushed the technology experience for the fan. And the first one is Levi's Stadium with the 49ers, which I think have done an amazing job, especially on the mobile technology side.
Yep.
And the second is Golden One Center, which is a Sacramento Kings new arena in Sacramento. And I think they've done a great job of the digital and app experience as well. So
and then, you know, shout out to Bill Schlow at the Giants.
You've set the standard in a way.
AT&T Park.
Exactly.
For saying this is what technology in a ballpark should look like.
Exactly.
And they've constantly been updated. So you're in a very, you know, forget nationally or globally, you're in a very competitive town and region where the bar just keeps getting set higher and higher.
And not just, you know, obviously locally the bar has been set pretty high, but now being able to go to Minnesota or Dallas or Atlanta and seeing those new venues, I mean, the bar keeps getting raised even higher and higher every single day.
So, and it was one of the panel discussions that Shane did at Seat.
Shout out to Shane Harmon.
Shout out to Shane Harmon. How do you balance how much technology is enough technology and, you know, enhancing the fan experience and, you know, bells and whistles for bells and whistles' sake, which, you know, is potentially something that's in front of you. Oh, you've got to have this and this and this. And, you know, the fan walks in. I sort of liken stadium development these days and someone potentially might, it's like when Homer Simpson built his own car and he just kept adding everything. Like there's a real danger that if you just add everything, you end up with Homer Simpson's car that's just got too much. How do you get that balance?
I think a lot of people ask the how and the what, and not necessarily the why.
Yep.
So I think we need to start asking ourselves, well, why are we doing this? Why are we integrating this technology, or why are we doing that? And once you can start asking those questions, you get people to really think about, well, maybe we don't need that.
Yep.
And so for us, I think it's really important to not just do technology for technology's sake, but if we truly feel that it's a part of the fan experience, it impacts it in a positive way. So for us, we always have to keep in mind that when we do things, it really has to make an impact. We don't really want to do things just for a press release that will go out and for people to congratulate us on Twitter.
Yep.
I mean, that stuff is great, but we really want to do things that truly impact the fans' experience. And so we've done a few of these things where, whether it's the Messenger chatbot that we launched in the playoffs, where we understand that chatbots were kind of hot and the buzzword, everyone's talking about it, but we saw a huge opportunity with a platform with over 1 billion users to really bring the Warriors to that user base.
Yep.
So we want to make sure that we're doing things the right way, because it truly impacts the fan experience in a better way.
Yeah, and the balance is also, as much as, moving to a new stadium is, and I've spoken this with a lot of NBA folk, is the global opportunity that the NBA offers. You have two, if not four, of the most marketable stars on the court, and they've got this global appeal. So the opportunity is global, and that's what things like doing the Messenger bot, as much as you're focusing on the fan experience at the stadium, how can you extend what's happening in Oracle, what's happening in the new stadium, to a global piece? And that's obviously part of your scope of work, to say, how do I get more of the performance stuff in the hands of more people globally?
Yeah. And I mean, when I tell people that we have someone on our digital team who just focuses on China and managing our Weibo account and our relationships with Chinese influencers, people are blown away.
Yeah.
But we have millions of followers on Weibo, and we have a huge brand in Weibo's in China.
Yep.
So we need to really engage with that audience. But for us, I think what's really unique is we've been working with a company called NextVR for a number of years. So one of our owners, Peter Guber, is an investor on the board of NextVR. And so a few years ago, he brought this to us and said, figure out VR with sports, with basketball. And so we've done a lot of testing over the last few years that I think has really helped NextVR position themselves into where they are now, which is one game a week broadcast in VR.
Yeah, so they did the league pass in VR, and then also I got a notification the other day.
Highlights.
They did the El Clasico in Miami.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot,
and it just starts as the adoption rate of that tech starts rolling out, then that's when you'll get the win. Like at the moment, it's so early on that curve of are people watching it. But whether it's the next Apple iPhone that makes it really easy, or whether it's whatever Facebook do in the Oculus space, when it becomes super easy mainstream and it doesn't look as clunky as it currently does, you'll have some of that premium content there. Because that's, you'll go to that platform and you go, oh, there's nothing there. Oh, I can watch an NBA game. Like, it's when new platforms pop up, they need premium content. So testing in this space now, it's much better to make mistakes when no one's watching.
Exactly.
Than, hey, here's the new platform.
And we always say that VR and AR is kind of the brick cell phone days.
Yeah.
Where people had it, but they didn't really understand what the possibilities were 10, 15, 20 years down the line. So as these phones are getting better, because what's crazy is NextVR shoots, and a lot of these VR companies shoot at such a high quality, but have to convert it down for the screen quality of the phones.
Yeah,
whether it's 2K or some phones are now 4K, but you're losing a lot of that quality. And what makes VR so unique is how close you can get to the action and how great of quality it can be. But we're so early and we're just scratching the surface on what's possible. These next few years, I think, are going to be amazing for sports fans around the world to be able to access this content as companies are just continuing to test.
Yep.
We're still in that proving ground stage of what this technology could be.
And the beauty is for you with a guy like Peter, with a really strong entertainment background, movies and all of that stuff, that's where he's made his money, to come to, to say, hey, the Warriors are in this space. We're an entertainment brand. How do we work on this platform? Then you have that angle, rather than, you know, how do we sell more tickets or you know, how do we win more games, which obviously he wants to do, but he's coming at it with an entertainment angle, so you guys get to tackle it that way.
And that's, I think, one of the best parts of having the performance engine and the innovation engine, because selling tickets and winning on the court are obviously incredibly important.
Yep.
And we would not be able to do this fun stuff like VR and AR and chatbots and,
yep,
and all that kind of stuff without having the performance engine like a well-oiled machine.
Yep.
So I think you have to have both. So you can't just focus all your time on the innovation side and what are we going to do in VR without really laying the groundwork and the foundation for how do we create great content, and then how do we use that to sell tickets and activate sponsorships and do everything else that we need to do as a business.
Yep. I wanted to dive in a little bit of the fact you are based in Silicon Valley, and there's a bit of envy, like, oh, it's so easy for the Warriors. They're just so the Silicon Valley is just down the road. It must be so easy. But it must be a bit of a blessing and a curse, because there's so many businesses there that, you know, we all know the sports teams get pitched all the time, but it must be almost tenfold for you and at the Warriors. How do you deal with that blessing and curse? And then how do you filter through some of those things to say, this is something we want to tackle, or this is something we can't?
I think it's definitely more of a blessing than it is a curse.
Yep.
I mean, it's being in Silicon Valley is one of our competitive advantages.
Yep.
And if we don't take advantage of it, then we're missing out on an incredible opportunity. So part of my job is to really engage with the Silicon Valley community, whether that's large corporates like working with Facebook and Apple and Twitter and Google and those companies, but then also working with a lot of the younger startups and interacting with the venture capitalists as well. So what's great about having those relationships, especially with the VCs, is they're sending us companies that are pre-vetted.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the challenges that a lot of sports teams have is they get so many cold emails from companies that they have no idea, is this a real company or not? Is, yep, this a company that if we sign up for their product, they're going to be around in a year?
Yep.
Versus when we get an email from Andreessen Horowitz or from Google Ventures or from Accel Partners with, hey, this is a company that we think you should really meet. For us, it ticks a lot of boxes to say, okay, it's already been vetted by some of the best investors in Silicon Valley.
Yep.
It's probably worth our time to meet with these guys. So having that resource and having that network and connection is huge. I think one of the really unique things about our organization is if you look at our ownership group, you have a lot of members of our ownership group that have made their money through tech,
yep,
whether it's as venture capitalists or through private equity, but also some founders. We have the founder of Yahoo, the founder of YouTube, the founder of Zappos. I mean, you have founders who have built incredible businesses and investors who have invested in amazing companies. I mean, Joe is a partner at Kleiner Perkins for over 20 years, and they've invested in some of the biggest companies in the technology world. So yep, to have that as our ownership group and to have those resources and really that understanding of technology and digital, it's such an amazing opportunity. And so I see it way more as a blessing than a curse.
Oh, no, completely. And it is, you know, the Warriors and the, you know, the ownership profile is pretty much is the fact that the ownership profile of the NBA teams is moving into that space of technology and media, and the fact that it is changing the way, you know, I was on another podcast this morning, changing the way the NBA tackles tech and media and how they tackle social, because it's completely different to the other big, you know, the other big sports in the NFL and MLB, in the way that they try to restrict and make sure everyone's in their appropriate channels. Where the NBA is very much, we want our content everywhere, because then we know the fans come back.
And I have to give a ton of credit to the NBA and specifically Melissa Brenner, who's the SVP of digital at the NBA, for really pushing the league to be really open.
Yep.
And just saying that putting our content out there is okay. Obviously, it starts with Commissioner Silver, who has been on the entertainment side of the NBA. He was,
yep,
the president of NBAE,
yep,
which is really the content side of the NBA, and he understands the value. But I think Melissa and her team of, you know, Sam Farber and, you know, all of those guys, Bob Carney, I mean, they've done such a good job of not only pushing the NBA forward in terms of content and digital, but also enabling a lot of the teams to be able to push their own content out as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the good thing about the NBA Turner relationship is that because Turner, you know, comes from a TV background, they're so video focused, and they're very early to see more people watching these clips on all these different platforms means more people tune in, whether it's on the League Pass or whether it's on TNT or TBS or ESPN. They sort of know that happens. And you know, rest in peace Vine. It only existed for the NBA, like for the amount of people taking clips and sharing highlights. But it's like that. Yes, it's fine. I like watching Steph Curry three pointers on my phone, but I want to watch them on my big screen. And it's a bit of, I'm constantly hitting my head against the wall with, talking to other leagues and listening to the frustrations of people working in other leagues. It's like, oh, why can't we do it that way? It's, quite frustrating for a lot of people.
And I think, you mentioned Turner, who has the broadcast rights along with ESPN for the NBA. I think the brand that they own that I think a lot of people often forget is Bleacher Report,
yep,
who I think are the kings of social highlights.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys put out some incredible content. I mean, Game of Zones is one of my favorite pieces of content ever. I think they do such an incredible job. And that's owned by a traditional media company. But the integration between kind of this millennial digital focused media company and then being inside a traditional broadcaster like Turner, I think you get the best of both worlds.
So before we wrap up, is there any... What are some of the cool projects that you have worked on in your time at the Warriors that you can talk about? Because I also know that there's a whole bunch of projects that people work behind the scenes you can't talk about. But what's one where you've gone, we've ticked that off, that was really cool?
So one of my favorite projects that I've had a chance to work on while at the Warriors has been the VR recruiting video that we made for free agents last summer. So our GM, Bob Myers, is... first of all, he's an amazing person,
yep.
But he really understands technology as well. So he had this idea of, why don't we create a recruiting video for potential free agents in VR so that they could really see what it's like to be on this team.
Yep.
And so we had all access. We were in the locker room, pregame and postgame. We were Steve Kerr's pregame speech. We captured that practice, the Bay Area. I mean, this incredible content. And we showed it to a certain free agent last summer, who ended up joining the Golden State Warriors.
And yeah, there's no prizes for guessing who, but yes.
And so the fact that we created this video and he actually put on the headset during the pitch meeting in the Hamptons and watched this video, and I thought it was pretty awesome that it may not have been the reason why Kevin decided to join the Warriors, but...
No, you can go. You can just say that you are the reason that he joined the Warriors. That's easy to say. I will be the one that says it, so you haven't said it. But the thing is, and that sounds completely awesome. And Kevin's the only one that's seen it. Is pretty much it was for a party of one.
Well, you know, we did a similar activation where I mentioned Accenture earlier as our technology innovation partner. To announce the partnership, Accenture came to us and said, what is one thing you guys want to do that you haven't been able to do because of whatever reason?
Yep.
And in my back of my mind, I was thinking about this recruiting video because we had such amazing access. I said, why don't we do a day in the life of the Warriors in VR?
Yep.
And then we can give it away to all of our fans and create VR headsets and kind of do the whole nine. And so we did that where we filmed the locker room, the practice facility, parts of the pregame introductions and the intros, and created this really great piece of content and created 30,000 headsets that we gave away, 20,000 at Oracle Arena, and then 10,000 through street teams in the Bay Area. And they didn't get to see everything, like Steve Kerr's pregame speech, but they got to see a lot, which was pretty cool.
That's good. It's good you get to repurpose it, but it is cool that you are working on, showing that point of difference and, feeling like you are part of the recruiting team, which you are. I mean, because the technology is a big part of the Golden State Warriors story. So,
and I think the cool thing also that showed, not just Kevin, but I think a lot of people, was that this is how we think as an organization, is we like to take risks. We want to be innovative. We want to do things and just give them a sense that if you come and join the Warriors, that you could be a part of this too, that this is what it's about to be in Silicon Valley and to be what we say, the base team.
Yeah.
And to be, like, for example, Ben Horowitz, the co-founder of Andreessen Horowitz, sits on the floor.
Yeah.
And Kevin's birthday party was at Ben's house last year. So you create this real family sense, when when you come to the Warriors and everyone who sits on the court, you know, and courtside seats, or just everyone around the community. I mean, Dub Nation is very, very strong. Yeah. And I think we're able to show a lot of parts of that in a lot of our VR work.
Terrific. So before we wrap up, I want to get to the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember your the first sports event you ever attended?
It was a San Francisco Giants game. So I grew up going to games with my sister. We would take Caltrain to 4th and King and walk over to AT&T Park and sit in the bleachers and had a great time. I probably started going to games when I was probably 11 or 12.
Yep. Terrific. And do you have a you've been to a lot of different venues in your travels with the Warriors, and as a fan, do you have a favorite or a go-to food at a sports event?
So my favorite food at a stadium is the crab sandwich at AT&T Park in San Francisco. It is one of my favorite, you can get chicken tenders and things like that. And I think the chicken tenders at Oracle are pretty solid, but the crab sandwich is just such a San Francisco food item, and they do it so well at AT&T Park.
Terrific. What's the first app you open and check in the morning?
Depends on the day, but most days it's usually Twitter to see kind of what happened or what I missed and just kind of catch up on what's going on.
So what days are you, what are the days when you're not?
Sometimes it's Snapchat.
Okay.
To see what my friends did the night before.
So it's a Sunday night or a Saturday morning that you go, well, what happened last night?
And sometimes it's Instagram. You never know.
Yeah. Who should the Sports Geek podcast listeners follow, and why, if there's someone that you think they should check out?
Well, besides you, of course, Sean.
Thank you. That was not paid for endorsement.
Justin Taylor, who just recently left Nike, who is the head of digital for Nike basketball.
Okay.
Just joined Blizzard.
Okay.
But he's running digital at Blizzard now. So I'm a little bit of a shoe geek, kind of like you are.
Yep.
So he kind of balanced that perfect shoe kind of basketball culture with digital and tech, and great follow. He's at the Smarmy Bum.
Oh yes, I know. Yes, I know.
On all social platforms.
Yes, very good. I think I do follow him on the Snap because he does good stories around the Nike activations and stuff like that. But now he's at Blizzard.
He is,
which is a very interesting twist. We didn't even talk esports.
That's big.
What's your take?
I'm a fan. I think it's an amazing opportunity. We're going to be a part of the NBA 2K. League with 2K.
Yep.
So we'll be one of the, I believe it's 17 teams that have a team. So I'm very excited to see how that all comes together.
Yeah, and the stuff that we did discuss with guys like Tom Halls, who are hopefully doesn't have to change jobs because I've mentioned him on the podcast, but he's very big in the esports space, is the difference that a lot of people don't know around the NBA 2K, that it's 5-on-5 with the players playing as themselves.
Exactly.
That's the piece that...
So you can't play as Kevin Durant or Stephen Curry. You have to create your own avatar.
Yeah, so...
Which I think is going to be pretty awesome.
No, I think it is completely awesome because there's no, you know, there's no advantage to, oh, I'm going to watch this sim of, you know, the Cavs versus the Warriors, because you're like, oh, I've watched it. You know, it's something different. But if you're watching a player that's built up himself in the My League type setup and he's playing with five other people, it sets up the NBA just like the real NBA, where you're following your favorite players and you have favorite players that you might follow on multiple teams and you want to see them match up. And then, again, going to your performance side of your business, the content guys can write the same or similar content in that space. So that's where I think there's the esports stuff, it's a great way for the NBA teams to dip their toe in the what is esports like. And then, you know,
exactly.
Do you want to acquire a League of Legends team? Do you want to do Counter-Strike? Do you want to do Call of Duty? All of that stuff, you can answer that after you've got that infrastructure in. I still think there's about 14 or 15 job applicant job descriptions out there. So if you know your esports, there's a way into the NBA that way.
We were hiring, we still are, I believe, still hiring an esports manager, but we had to take the job down because we got too many applications. We just couldn't sift through them all.
It is a good problem to have. Talking to Michael at Seat, I think he said he was one of 800 people when he got his role at the Warriors. So it's, you know, it's not an easy thing to get into. I did forget the last question, and it is dedicated to Kevin Durant, which is what is your social media platform that is your MVP?
So from a business perspective, Facebook is definitely where it's at for us at the Warriors. For me personally, I probably have to say Instagram.
Yep. So you just like the double tap. And are you in on the stories? Are you liking the twist that they're making there?
I am. Yeah. I don't post a ton of stories. I find that for stories, I post a lot more on Snapchat, but I keep that pretty much to people I only actually know in real life.
Yep.
So I only, it's a pretty small group there. But I think you're able to just be really creative on Instagram. And I just love seeing the creativity from other brands and athletes and friends who really use the platform in really amazing ways.
And it is, I mean, I've been sort of watching Instagram, and the fact that it's now, it's effectively two products mashed into one is just amazing. And now the fact that with the stories component that it is driving traffic, like, you know, swipe up to read this article, and all the teams are getting terrific traffic and engagement on that. And so, yeah, it's been a good twist. Still remains to be seen what Snap does when it sort of comes back and what it can do. But, you know, we watch and learn. So last but not least, where can people find you and connect with you and reach out to you?
So I'm pretty much at Daniel Brew everywhere on the internet. Twitter.com/Daniel Brew, Instagram.
That's Brew, B-R-U.
Yes.
You can track him down there. So thank you very much for taking the time on your tour down under. He's been more popular than Michael Jackson in 1987 down here. He's getting pulled left, right, and center from meeting with clubs. And I'm looking forward to his at the conference on Friday. But, yeah, very much thankful for you to come down and look forward to catching up with you again. I don't know if it's going to be another 2 weeks, but either in San Francisco or in Melbourne. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Daniel. As I said, in his time in Melbourne, he was a rock star here, catching up with all the teams, providing them more information of what he discussed in the podcast, the performance engine and the innovation engine. And it's a really smart way of doing it. You know, I have discussed it previously with Kenny Lauer and the way that they go about it. And I really want to know, how does your team or how does your company innovate? Do you have dedicated people like Daniel or Jack Elkins at the Orlando Magic? Or do you do it another way? Sort of the Google way is to putting 20% of your work time aside to work on cool projects to potentially help the business? Or do you just put aside a week or a day or a weekend where you dedicate things? You know, some people don't have the luxury of having a Daniel in the team to be able to sort of have his head clear of the day-to-day. Yeah, how do you tackle it? And yeah, if you would like some help in that space, if you would like to, you know, have a workshop or look in to how your team can innovate, or at least really it's all about deciding what project to tackle. There's a whole bunch of things you can innovate on, but you really want to decide which project to tackle. And so like Daniel said then, you know, how is it going to better help the performance engine? How is it going to end up driving more tickets or getting more people in the stadium or, you know, getting better returns for your sponsors? So I think that's something that you really want to anchor everything from an innovation point of view on. But again, thank you very much to Daniel for coming on the pod. I thoroughly enjoy every time I catch up with Daniel. I wish we could record more of the conversations because they're always interesting, and I absolutely appreciate the fact that I get to meet people like Daniel as part of the doing the podcast. So just before I wrap up, I'm really loving the response and the conversations that I'm having post seat and catching up with people post seat Atlanta around sports campaigns. You know, one of the big themes that sort of came out of it, as I said, I was in the data track a little bit more, and there was a lot of conversation of how do you set up your rate card? What is your rate card? How do you then build out the valuation for what you're selling from a media point of view? And, you know, that's still an area of confusion for a lot of people, and that's still an area of confusion. It's a bit of disconnect between digital and sponsorship. So a lot of the conversation I've been having with people is, well, let's get that stuff sorted, or at least bedded down to a point where we can build out great campaigns. So the conversations start around rate cards and what is a Facebook post worth, what is a Facebook post that's a video worth, what is a video with a lot of player IP in it worth compared to a sponsor one, and then getting down to the nitty-gritty of, well, how many of those pieces of content are getting produced, and then what are they? What types of pieces of content are being produced to support the campaign, and how I go about valuing that whole picture. And so that's pretty much what Sports Geek Campaigns is, in is walking you through that process, but then at the end of the process is you'll have 5 to 10 to 15 different types of campaigns with supporting content, with known outcomes as far as known work outcomes for your team, to say, well, this is what our sponsorship team can sell. And as I said earlier in other podcasts, sponsorship teams like to sell things that they know. And so what we're trying to do with Sports Geek Campaigns is putting, making those campaigns things that they know, putting them in terms that both they can sell, but then also that their sponsors understand. So putting it all into a neat box and saying, this is the box, this is the box, the box is worth this, you can sell the box for this, and this is the type of sponsors would like this box. And so it's about producing and providing more boxes for your sponsorship team to sell, make it a little bit easier. And once they do that, you call us in and we execute. We build the campaigns, run the ads for the campaigns, run the reports for the campaigns, and there's no stretching of the digital resources on execution for sponsors, which is, you know, critically important. So if you're interested, you know, you can simply send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. You can go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com and you can fill out the form and book in a time for a call. I'm happy to have many conversations, because what I am trying to do, and this is, I did raise it in the Sports Biz Slack, I think I am going to probably do a bit of an aggregation project and sort of get a bunch of different people's rate cards if they're willing to share them, and sort of build out a report that says this is what people are selling different pieces of property for, to sort of get some knowledge. So if you're interested in that, yeah, again, get in touch. I'm going to launch that soon to sort of say, let's try to get some standards around what we're doing, how people are selling. But pretty much what I want to do is share the best practice of what people are doing. You know, if you listen to the Joe Gottfried podcast, Joe from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, you know, I jokingly but wholeheartedly believe, and I called him a unicorn because he is so unique in the industry and what he does. I want to help more people know what Joe does. I think what the Clippers and Erin Prober at the Clippers, I loved her presentation at Seat. I think what they're doing is innovative in the way that they're valuing their media and explaining it to their media buyers. That's what I want to get out of doing this work with Sports Geek Campaigns, is help more teams come to a common ground to make that conversation around selling what they're doing, and they're selling, and you're selling media. You're selling media first, and then the second part is, are you selling this ability to acquire? So there's a cost per acquisition, and then the last piece is you're selling a digital activation, and that's just a plain old, we need a cool mini site that does a voting mechanism, and that's sometimes all the brief that you get. And we've got that out of the box with all the capabilities that Tradable Bits has. So please give us a call. The number is now, like Jimmy Butler, is in the end of the is at the end of the podcast. Or you can just send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Until that next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack.
Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes.
Find out how to drive between $8,000 and $30,000 in profit for each digital campaign you sell sponsors. Check out sportsgeekcampaigns.com. Just like Jimmy Butler, you can call Sean anytime at 601-407-0407-200.